Can you, is this, am I okay, like, lighting and everything, or do you need me to change anything on this side?
Oh, you're fine, you're fine.
Okay, super.
Okay, so this is Charlotte Adams interviewing Dr. Aaron Mars for the USC Public History Program Archives. It is October 27th, 2016. So, starting off, tell me about what led you to the University of South Carolina.
Okay, great. I was a history major as an undergraduate at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin, and I had a really terrific advisor there, a guy named Michael Hiddle, and he told me that I needed to obviously figure out what I was going to do when I graduated, and that I should not go to graduate school because of inertia. Right, some sort of sense that, well, it's September, so I should be buying books and, you know, starting new classes and all this sort of thing. And so he said that, you know, graduate school is fine, but you need to take an intensive look at what programs you want and what you might be interested in as a career. And so at that point, I mean, I loved history, loved studying it, reading, writing, the whole bit. And so I took a look at public history programs, specifically with regards to archives. And the University of South Carolina and the University of Maryland both have very similar programs in terms of a dual degree with library science and history. And that appealed to me, I think, much more than just a straight up library science program, which I did apply to. But I would say the dual degree program was always in my top tier of interest. And then I think it was in January of 1999, I got a call in my dorm room from Connie Schultz, who offered me a comprehensive aid package. And so that seemed to seal the deal. USC was always one of my top choices. I'd grown up in the Midwest. I wanted to see a different part of the country. USC had an outstanding reputation, and they were going to give me money. So I had no problem moving forward after that.
Why did you think that archives would be a good fit for you?
At the time, That's a really interesting question. I have to get, sort of go back and reconstruct what I was thinking. I think I liked the idea of working with documents. I liked the idea of the sort of reference type of work that archivists do, which is actually, I mean, I'm not employed in archives now, obviously, but I still do that type of, getting questions in and figuring out what the answer is and responding. So I think that was attractive. It just seemed like a great way to be in touch with historical materials without taking the full dive at that time into a PhD program and with the outcome being professorship. So it seemed like a good way to sort of get in, decide if this is what I wanted to do, and it was more attractive to me, I think, than the idea of being in a museum or working in a historic house or at preservation or any of those other things. So there you go.
And why, you mentioned that you didn't want to do just the library and information science. Why did you want to go for public history rather than just that?
Well, I really liked history. I've always enjoyed reading and writing history. I mean, that's a long-standing interest part. I declared as a history major right away in college. I loved my history classes, and the library science programs tended to be, I want to say, a bit more technical. Things like, the chemistry of paper and that kind of stuff that were actually, obviously, really useful for archivists, but not something where USC probably had a real strength quite so much, at least at the time that I was there. I mean, I did take a class on preservation, but it was a really broad overview, not highly technical. And so I think the attractiveness of USC's program was the history degree, and that it would sort of let me keep a foot in that part of the profession. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Okay.
So you started off just going for the dual masters, and then what changed that led you to a PhD?
A couple of factors. I guess probably the most significant was I was having a really good time. I really enjoyed the process of writing my master's thesis, which was on deserters from South Carolina infantry during the Civil War. And doing the research and the writing for that was obviously, you know, at a thesis level was, you know, far beyond anything that I'd ever done as an undergraduate. And it was great. I mean, I went out to the South Carolina Department of Archives and History. You know, I was there all the time looking at microfilm and tracking these soldiers, and felt that I was really, you know, getting new information as the result of this research, which is always the goal. And so I decided that I really wanted to try my hand at a larger, more significant piece of research. And I didn't, I don't think I had much of an end goal in mind, which probably wasn't a very good move. But when I started the PhD program, I was like, oh, well, this would be fun. And USC is a great school. We've got great archival resources in Carolinianna, and good library in Thomas Cooper. And I had a great, terrific cohort of fellow scholars working on the 19th century at the time. I don't know how many of these people you're going to talk to, but, you know, Kathy Hilliard and Rebecca Schrum, Kevin Dawson, just a lot of great people studying early America. So it was a really nice time to be there. And my advisor, Mark Smith, was terrific to work with. He had advised my, was the first reader on my master's thesis, although Connie was obviously my advisor from the archival standpoint in terms of coursework and all that. And I really liked working with Mark. He was terrific. It was intellectually invigorating. And so I just wanted to keep that going, and thought I would figure out the end closer to the end, which is probably not very good advice for anyone else considering this, but it's what I did. So,
yeah. So, rewinding a little bit.
Sure.
Tell me about your actual experience getting your master's degree. Were there any courses, any professors that were especially impactful in the process?
Yeah, there were several. I mean, USC had just a terrific faculty. Let's see if I can remember this going back this long. Some of the courses that stand out with me, the first one may be a little bit unusual, but the historical research methods that public history students did their first semester, I never understood why everybody didn't do that their first semester, because it was a brilliant class. And then when I took it, it was taught by Connie Schultz and Casey Greer, and they really sort of took you around all the different types of primary source documentation that historians use, and you got a really good sense of what historical research was like in South Carolina, and that was just a tremendously useful course. I remember taking a class on documentary editing with David Chestnut, the former editor of the papers of Henry Lawrence, and just a giant in the field of documentary editing. And ironically, I ended up working on a documentary editing project here at the Department of State. So I was one of the few people in this. There aren't a lot of courses on documentary editing. That's a rare bird. And so I was fortunate to have that. And one of the things about Dr. Chestnut is that he was very forward-thinking in terms of the use of computer technology in documentary editing. And so, one moment, please.
Sorry.
Hi. Okay, great. Let's pause for a second. Sorry about that. My room reservation must not have been that convincing. So I actually got a great introduction to the computers in the humanities in that course back in 2000, which was, I think, pretty forward thinking. And then just on sort of the, obviously there was Connie's class on archives itself, which was a tremendous, a tremendous thing. And I'm trying to remember, some of the courses run together because, of course, I then had to do coursework at the PhD level. But I, at the master's level, I took 702 with Paul Johnson. Actually, 702 would be sort of like the 19th century reading seminar. I don't know, maybe it has a different number now. But talk about great faculty. To be able to meet someone like him and learn about the 19th century from him was terrific. On the library science side, the core class on reference, and I don't remember the name of that professor who taught it, unfortunately, but that was just incredibly useful to me as a researcher, just learning about it. I'd say that class and the cataloging class were the two classes that helped me the most. Reference just in terms of learning about the universal resources and how to find things, and cataloging, learning how libraries think about information makes it a lot easier to find information when you're looking for it. And so that was both of those were tremendously useful. And I took both of those in the summer, so they were compressed down to a month, and it was brutal. That was a brutal summer, but I survived.
So you mentioned Mark Smith. Do you have any other professors that serve sort of as advisors, mentors, just especially had a big impact?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Walter Edgar, I never took a class from him, but in his capacity as the director of Southern Studies, I worked for 3 years on the South Carolina Encyclopedia, which was published in 2006, and I think is now available online through the Humanities Council.
I think it was just published today? Somebody posted something about it.
Yeah, so. No, I saw it. I saw it on Twitter last night, I think. And that's what a great thing for that to be now more widely available. Walter was incredibly kind and interested in my development as a student, and very supportive throughout my time at USC. So he was tremendous. Mark, meeting Mark was one of the one of the most important things that ever happened in terms of my intellectual development. I mean, he was an absolutely. Have you had a class with him or?
He came to our sort of introductory class yesterday and talked to us about publishing. So
yeah, well, okay, he's the one to listen to on publishing. I just absolutely, invigorating, and one of those people who, has incredibly high standards, but at the same time, it just sort of makes you want to work harder. It's that you don't get bitter about the high standards. It just makes you want to do more, and so I'm always really, grateful for his guidance. Connie is just. you know, a wonderful person, a dear friend, a titan in the field of early American studies and archiving, every other field that she touched. So to be able to meet her and work with her was simply tremendous. I don't want to take up the whole time talking about this, but it's like when you're giving an acceptance speech, you're worried that you're not going to mention someone. So I don't want to make this sort of an exclusive list, but in the interest of time, the last person I'll mention is Larry Glickman, who has since, I think, moved on to Columbia University. But he was a reader on my dissertation, taught a course on the history of consumerism, which was incredibly powerful to take and to really feel, with that class and Mark's class on the history of time, those were two classes where, even probably Casey's class on material culture, those are classes where not most universities in the country are offering those types of courses. And so to be able to do that all at one institution at USC was really phenomenal. But Larry was a great guy, a great mentor. He was director of graduate studies for a stint while I was there. And I think always, it's a difficult position to be in, but he definitely, I always felt like he, tried to treat us fairly, even if, some things in terms of financing and resources were ultimately beyond his control. So great coterie of professors at USC, and that's not in a exclusionary list, but those are the people that sort of come to mind now.
Yeah, definitely. Did you have a internship requirement when you were in the program?
I did. I did my internship at the Wisconsin Veterans Museum in Madison. I attended, I think it was AASLH 1 year, and American Association of State and Local History, met the director of that museum at the conference. And he mentioned that they had an internship for their archive, which was a paid internship of all things. And so I had a friend who lived in Madison. I still have a friend who lives in Madison. And so I slept on his floor for a summer and worked at the Veterans Museum. And it was tremendous. It was a very interesting experience. Wisconsin has veterans going all the way back to the Civil War. So they had a wide range of fascinating historical material that they worked with. I got to work on some Civil War manuscripts for them, some posters. They have this whole series of, I forget what they're called, but they are photographs that are panoramic photographs, but like from the 19th century. So they were all rolled up really tightly, and we had to like work to sort of get them to a stage where they could be flattened out again, very slowly over time, just to not damage them. I answered some reference requests for them. They occasionally had researchers come in. So it is a museum, but they had an archive and service researchers. And so that's the part that I worked in. And it was great. It was a great, the museum, probably about, museum in total, probably had about 8 or 10 employees altogether. So nice small group of people. It's right on the Capitol Square. Madison's a fantastic place to be. And so the internship aspect of the program worked out very well for me.
Great. Did you do a graduate assistantship as well?
Yeah, I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit there.
Oh, sorry. Did you do a graduate assistantship as well?
Oh, yes. That was obtaining a graduate assistantship was, I think at the time, one of the main ways to get in-state tuition rates for graduate students. And of course, coming from I attended college in Wisconsin, but I was a resident of Iowa. And so, of course, initially coming in, I wasn't a resident. But I think by having an assistantship, that's what got my tuition down to a more manageable level. And so I had an assistantship either an assistantship or taught my own course every semester while I was in school. So I TA'd In fact, my first assistantship was a TA ship. So I just graduated from college, and then 3 months later, I'm only a year older than some of the students in the class. I TA'd for 101, ancient history survey, which I had not studied in years. But I quickly realized that as long as you did the reading, you're okay. So I was able to keep up. I had good mentors from the other teaching assistants. I had an assistantship for 1 year in the modern political collections portion of Caroliniana. And then I had an assistantship for either 2 or 3 years with the South Carolina Encyclopedia doing fact checking. So back when all those articles were being written, there was a group of us who were fact checking every article. Under Tom Downey, who was the managing editor. And that was a blast. I mean, that was a great, that was a great assistantship. And then when I went to the PhD program, I returned to being a TA, and then ended up teaching my own class for at least one semester there at the end. So assistantships all the way through.
Great. Do you think that having the opportunity to do sort of hands-on experience with your internship and with the assistantship you had in the political collections, do you think that that was really important to preparing you as an archivist, even though you sort of strayed?
Yeah, I did stray, didn't I? I think I think so. I think both of those experiences gave me a good sense of what the profession would hold, both in terms of sort of, the good things and the bad. And so I don't want you to take, or not you, I don't want someone reading this to take away from this that like, oh, he worked in these two places and then didn't do the job, so it must have been terrible. That wasn't the case. They're both good places to work. When I was at Modern Political Collections, they had recently acquired the papers of Robert McNair, who was governor of South Carolina, I think in the late 60s or early 70s. And, working with those was tremendous. I also got to work on a series of about several hundred political cartoons done by a guy who had been a cartoonist for the state newspaper. And so I don't want someone to come away from this thinking that I must have had some sort of horrible experience at these places and then decided to do it. I think it was more of a pull factor than a push factor in terms of being pulled towards, continued research and writing. Because it was clear, and it is the case in my, current job, is that there aren't necessarily a lot of opportunities for that level of research and writing in that profession. Some people can pull it off and do a great job, but it takes concerted effort and isn't necessarily easy to do. And so I wanted to make sure I could maintain those opportunities at least for a little bit. And so I think that was probably, one of the lessons I took away from these experiences. If I could say one other thing about this,
yeah.
This may prejudge another question, but I do want to get it out there, is that while I was at USC, I worked in a museum, I worked in an archive, I taught, I was a research assistant, and then I worked on the encyclopedia. And so I feel very strongly that more so than other programs that I could have attended, that USC gave me a very good breadth of understanding of what the possibilities are in the historical profession. And so I think it is to USC's credit that when I was looking for employment, I didn't just look, I certainly applied to colleges and universities, but because of my experience at USC, I was well aware that that wasn't the only possible outcome, or even necessarily the best outcome. And I think, meeting other people in my own age group, you know, conferences or hear work or whatever, it's clear that USC did an outstanding job of sort of giving its students a sense of what the possibilities were because of that breadth of experience that I had in terms of the work that I did while I was there. I have a lot of friends who just did TA ships, and that's fine. There's nothing, I mean, the world needs TAs, but I'm really glad that I had more opportunities to do different types of work because that really opened my eyes to the possibilities that were out there. And so that's, and there's no question that that's a direct result of the public history program's influence on the department as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just hands down, you know, a deep, incredibly positive thing about what the public history program does. So,
yeah.
Thanks for that.
So it helped you sort of broaden your horizons in terms of the job market. Do you think that USC's reputation, I guess, was helpful to you when you were looking for jobs?
That's a really interesting question. My sense is that at the time that I was there in the early 2000s, my sense is that USC's reputation was sort of rising. But at the same time, when I, USC is the only doctoral program I applied to, right? I mean, I wanted to stay there and work with Mark and work with the Records of Carolinianna and do this project and so on and so forth. So I didn't apply anywhere else. But I think I obviously did that with the knowledge that, you know, it's not, doesn't have Berkeley's or Harvard's or Yale's sort of name recognition immediately, except within the context of public history, right? I mean, there USC definitely stands in good regard. And so I think I had this sense that the reputation of the department was increasing, and the person who was the chair at the time, a fellow named Pat Maney, I think that was definitely something that was important to him, and that was, you know, bringing in new faculty with big name recognition, people like Dan Carter, people like Paul Johnson, people like Dan Littlefield, you know, those people coming in and, you know, talking up our accomplishments more. And so I think I benefited from some of that. But I was also aware that, you know, the name wasn't necessarily going to open all the doors immediately. Now, having said that, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. I mean, the name can only get you so far. If you have a well-regarded degree attached to your name, but then you show up at a job and do crap work, that's not going to, the name won't save you there. So I think I was aware of what I was getting into, but I was also, I think, benefited from the fact that Dr. Maney was aggressively trying to build the brand recognition of USC at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
okay.
So you only applied to USC for your PhD program.
Yeah,
so
I'm glad I got in.
Do you feel like Columbia was, as a city, was helpful in, you know, studying history?
Oh, Columbia. Let's see. Columbia was helpful as a city in studying history. That's a really, I'm not entirely sure how to answer that. What I liked about Columbia was that it was fairly livable. I mean, it's certainly, I mean, you do sort of need a car to get around. That's tough. But it was nice that most of the resources, a lot of the resources I needed were there.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the State Library, you've got the Department of Archives and History, Carolinianna, all sort of, you know, centered around the city. So it's not, I mean, the weather is awful and you can't, you know, it's not very walkable and this sort of thing, but all the resources were around, and that was nice. I actually went back to Columbia in the spring for the first time in many years, and it was nice to be back and walk around Five Points and just sort of see what was going on. And I definitely have good memories of of living there, but I don't miss the humidity, that's for sure. That was not conducive to studying history. Actually, you know, maybe it was, because I wanted to stay inside and work instead of walking outside.
So how do you feel like, you've mentioned that, you know, your reference classes have certainly helped you in doing research and figuring out how, you know, libraries work and how, where you can find things. Can you think of any other sort of applicable skills that you've learned that help you in your current career?
That's really interesting. I think that, you know, so for my job now, I'm a historian at the Department of State, and I serve mostly an internal audience. People in the department have questions about history of U.S. foreign policy with regards to sub-Saharan Africa. Those questions come to me. And I think that the public history program, a couple of things that I learned either in the public history program or the PhD program. One is sort of the question of audience, knowing your audience and you sort of knowing, the importance of knowing your audience and what their interests are and sort of what they are going to, how you can communicate to an audience in a way that's going to be meaningful to them, if that makes sense. So in public history, you know, whether it's a archival finding aid or a website or wall text at a museum, you've sort of got to figure out, you know, we've got all this historical material, far more than we can ever communicate. How do we select the salient points and communicate that in a way that's going to be meaningful to the person receiving this historical information? So that's definitely, that's part and parcel of my job. I've got to figure out, how much information are these people going to want an answer as a result. I think there's also a research aspect. In graduate school, you have to learn when to stop researching, right? When have you, effectively reached the reasonable end of research? Yes, there are 10 more collections of letters we could look at, but do we have enough now to answer this question? And that's really important where I'm working now, because sometimes the turnaround times on requests are short. And, we do a lot of research in Department of State cable traffic, the sort of official correspondence between embassies and Washington, and there are millions of cables that have been written over the decade. Just millions and millions and millions. And so we've got to be able to figure out, yes, there's this huge mass of information out there, but this is enough to actually answer the question in a way that's meaningful to the person who asked the question. And I think that comes out of graduate school work as well, just sort of knowing when to stop. There are definitely people who take, the average time to complete a dissertation is something like 8 or 9 years. It's a long time. Graduate school as a whole, right from the start of the PhD program to the end. And so I didn't want to be in that situation when I started. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is not everybody learns that lesson, or they don't all learn it in the same way, but that's definitely something I picked up on.
So you are working with your area sort of is sub-Saharan Africa, but that is not what you studied in school, correct?
I studied American history at USC. I had a minor field in African American history, so I sort of had the diaspora side of the story, and now I'm back with the continent itself. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things about being a historian in the federal government is that we get asked questions and we have to answer them, and if the Secretary of State wants to know something, we don't say, "Well, I'm sorry, we don't have a specialist on 19th century Finland, so we just can't answer that question." You gotta figure it out. This is actually another thing, probably from graduate school, and working on the encyclopedia, which required just this huge breadth of research and figuring things out, is you just got to figure out how to dive into a topic and, figure out the relevant secondary literature, do the primary research you can, and get the answer. And so that's actually one of the intellectually invigorating things of being in the federal government, is there's a huge variety of material that I get to research. It's great. I am learning new things all the time, which is pretty much, I think, the best thing you can ask for in a job is to be intellectually engaged. And so, yes, the work I'm doing now is not the result of my studies, but I've tried to prove over the time I've been doing this that I've got the ability to get in quickly, figure it out, write it up, and then on to the next thing. So I do my best.
So you mentioned your master's thesis you wrote about deserters in South Carolina, and then your dissertation you wrote about the antebellum railroads in
That's
South.
Right.
Can you tell me about some of that research? This just sounds fun.
Oh, it was a blast. So when you look at the historiography of antebellum transportation, most of it concentrates on Northern railroads, and Southern railroads were assumed to be sort of like the poorer second cousins of Northern developments. And so I decided to take a look at Southern railroads sort of on their own terms, just figure out, it turns out there was a lot of sort of really basic research that needed to be done in terms of where they went and how they were developed and that sort of thing. So the research was really pleasingly eclectic. The South Carolinian had a whole run of printed railroad reports for railroad companies, mostly in South Carolina, which was terrific. And a lot of times these reports had been mined for their data on finances, like how railroads were funded, did they pay dividends, that sort of thing. But it turns out, if you really, if you read all the way through these reports, there's a ton of material on social history in these reports as well, because they would print the minutes of shareholders meetings. And this is where shareholders would argue about, should railroads employ slaves? Should railroads own slaves? How do we deal with communities that don't want us to build through their property? How do we deal with communities that complain about noise? All kinds of things. And so I'm not claiming I was the first person to do this at all, but I think in a sort of a systematic way, going through a lot of these reports, mining them for their social and cultural information and not just the financial economic stuff, I think was very interesting to do. I looked at minutes, I looked at material at Carolinian. I did research at the Harvard Business School. I did research at the Virginia Historical Society. And then I took another trip to Madison and did research at the Wisconsin Historical Society because they had a collection of about 8 or 9 letter books from a man who was a civil engineer in South Carolina for about a decade, and just a ton of information in there about his interaction with slave owners and using slaves and all kinds of things. I looked at diaries and journals of people who rode on trains. I did some work in newspapers, so it was a lot of fun, and it was a great experience to write up. And I was really fortunate that it fit well. The dissertation topic fit well with what the sort of things that Johns Hopkins publishes, and so I finished the dissertation in 2006, and then in 2009, Hopkins published the revised version that I'd written. So that was a lot of that was very gratifying to be able to get that research out and to find a good home for it with Hopkins.
Did you apply for any grants when you were doing your research?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I applied for a lot of grants, but I was lucky enough to get two, which were very, very useful. I got one at the Virginia Historical Society, funded me for 2 weeks there. And then I got one from the Harvard Business School that funded me for about four, I think I was there for about 4 or 5 weeks. And they had amazing collections, both in terms of railroad material, but then they also have the collection of R.G. Dunn, which I think then later became Dunn and Bradstreet and was this an early credit reporting agency. And so their staff would go around the country and write down sort of like local information about the creditworthiness of individuals and companies. And so I was able to find out sort of the information about the railroads and the contractors that they were employing from these credit reports. So Harvard was a great place to do research. But I got those two grants where I couldn't have done the research in either place without money. So those two were very helpful.
Great. So this is sort of a left field kind of a, I don't know, I was just curious, do you consider your job with the Department of State to be public history or more traditional? How do you think of it? Because I know it's sort of a hard concept to pin down.
Yeah, and it's a little, it's public history in the sense that I'm in the public service, right? I mean, I'm a civil servant myself, and my audience is the federal government. The work that I do will end up archived to the National Archives eventually for, anyone to read who's interested. So I definitely, and the people that I'm informing are in turn executing public policy, for the citizens of this great country. And so I think to that degree it is public history. But you're right that it's a little odd because it's not public history in the classic sense, which is to engage directly with the public. The public comes to this museum. I work at the museum, so here we are. So in a sense, I can understand how it's sort of seen as a step removed. I definitely view it as service to the public. It's just a little bit circumscribed simply because so much of the work is classified because it's a recent vintage. Having said that, the day-to-day work, so I guess maybe public history is like the genre or the big category that I fit in, but the day-to-day work that I do is fairly traditional. I mean, I'm doing primary research and I'm writing reports based on my research. The mode is different. I mean, I don't often write something even as long as a journal article simply because people in a policymaking position don't have, hours and days to go through this stuff. It's not that we don't write any long form work. We certainly do. But usually if someone out of post wants an answer to a question, they're looking for something that they can digest pretty quickly. So I think the work is traditional in the sense that it's the same research and writing that I've always done, but the formatting is definitely different. Does that address your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. So another sort of broad one. So
okay.
You love history. I love history. We all love history. It's great. But there's sort of what some people are calling a crisis in the field where history is, being devalued. What do you think is the importance of learning history, teaching history?
Yeah, that's a great question. And as a professional, I should probably have like a really snappy answer to that.
Have your elevator speech ready.
I know. This doesn't make me look very good. Let me answer that within the context in which I work. Foreign service officers, who are our primary audience, they move around to different posts every couple of years, every 2 or 3 years. They, they get a new assignment, they're off to somewhere else. And so as a result, there's not a lot of institutional knowledge that remains at the place because the people are changing all the time. There are locally employed staff who stick around, but in terms of the high-level policy folks at a post, they're always on the move. And so one of the things our office does is supply that institutional knowledge. I was meeting with someone yesterday who said, you know, it'd be really great before I launch on Project X, it'd be really nice to know if anyone actually tried this 10 years ago and it failed. But I just arrived in this office last week. So, you know, they don't necessarily have that. And so I think one of the values of history in this context is sort of that classic know where you've been so that you can know where you're going. And it's not that history necessarily repeats itself, or just because something didn't work before doesn't mean it won't work again. But I think it is useful to know what has happened in the past. I think that history in the where I work does a really important job of providing context for policy, and it what I hope it would also do is for our audience, I don't know if humility is the right word, but maybe it's just sort of like a broader context, but this sense that, you know, you may have this portfolio now working in this country, but you're not the first person to face these problems, problem X, but other people have come before you. Others are going to come after you. And so I would hope that studying history would help our audience like ground themselves a bit better. So even if they don't think about the specifics of history while they're doing their job, they at least have a concept that they are part of some sort of broader stretch. A lot of times in foreign policy, people don't get to see changes in the time when they're working on something. It's sort of like slowly moving the football down the field. And so you may work somewhere for 3 years and say, oh man, we only made it 7 yards. But if you step back and look at the whole broad picture, it might help give you a better understanding of either why the progress is so slow, or maybe it doesn't even look that slow when it's bad, or maybe you realize, well, we're never gonna get anywhere until the president steps down, or you know something. So I think there are a lot of contextual ways in which history is useful. And you know, in this modern time, we consume, there is so much information coming at us, right? I mean, there's all the social media and 24-hour news networks, and there's just so much material that people have to digest. I think historical context lets people, again, step back and take a wider look at what's in front of them. And, you know, maybe this particular tweet isn't that important, or that we don't have to panic about it right now. But we can think about sort of these things more broadly. I don't know. That is not an elevator speech. That was really long. I'm sorry about that. I hope you're getting better than the answers to that question from other people.
It's just fine. Okay, so we went broad. Now we're going to go narrow.
Okay.
Because we're sort of running down as far as time goes, and I just want to ask you a few sort of wrap-up questions.
Sure.
So as far as, you know, one of the things that we sort of tout is our broad alumni network. And I just wanted to know what sort of connections or contact you kept in with other alumni and how you felt you were keeping in touch with the program as well.
Yeah, I made really great friends while I was at USC. And so I'm really glad that I've kept in touch with them. I think probably more as friends than as a professional mm-hmm. network that I've drawn upon. Well, that's not true. Certainly draw upon for advice and things like that, but it's not like networking got me this job or anything like that. But as, you know, after we graduated and as we moved through life, you're facing, you know, common challenges, you know, getting a book contract or, you know, figuring out, you know, employment situation, or is this job something good for me or bad for me? And I've had a lot of great people that I've kept in contact with. So there's no question that the USC network has continued to travel with me as I've gone through. Yes.
Yes.
So the answer to your question is yes.
In regards to keeping in contact with the actual people, so like Connie and Bob and Allison, have you been keeping in touch with them?
Did yeah, I think Allison, I think, arrived after I left,
mm-hmm.
or like her first year was my last year or
mm-hmm.
something like that. So I don't know her very well at all. But certainly Connie and Bob, I keep up with. I've asked them both professional questions, but we also keep up as friends, you know, Christmas cards, that type of thing. So I've always found USC the department to be a very friendly, congenial place. And I was really delighted that continued after I left.
Do you find that you are being kept abreast of what's going on in sort of the public history program and the history department?
Yeah, I mean, Bob's pretty rigorous about sending out email, which is good. I actually wish the rest of the department did something along those lines. I mean, the only sort of news I really get from the university is there's a newsletter that the College of Arts and Sciences sends to alums. I mean, maybe they send it to everybody, but I know they send it to alums because I get it. And so history pops up in that every once in a while. But I'd be very interested to know, you know, more about what's going on with the department and what the graduate students are up to, particularly if there's any way that I can be helpful. I mean, I'm always happy to talk to, and I've done this with my undergraduate school as well, but I'm always happy to talk to students about, you know, life in the federal service and what it's like to be operating as a historian in the government and all that sort of thing. So always happy to help out. I appreciate Bob's, routine updates on activities, and I actually wish the rest of the department would step up and do something similar. Or maybe they are and I'm just not getting it, but I don't think it exists.
So do you think that's why you volunteered for the interview?
Well, I have to say, I just started doing oral history as part of my job.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was not something that I studied at USC. I don't think there was an oral history course at USC. And also, my tenure there also predates the arrival of people who explicitly did oral history. I predate everything. It's a miracle I learned anything. and so I've come to recognize the value of oral history as a method of generating primary source material. I was just trying to help out. if there's any way that my own meager recollections can be useful to the department, then I'm happy to do that. I mean, the history department gave me a lot. A great education, a solid degree, great friendships, and a undying love of air conditioning. So I'm happy to donate back whenever I can.
Well, we are very appreciative.
Oh, thank you.
So sort of the big thinking cap, what do you see for the future of the public history program?
Well, I mean...
So
go ahead.
I did this exercise with my students today, but we did something that you would like to start, something you would like for them to continue, and something you would rather stopped. Would that help you sort of break it down?
Yeah. So I'll be honest. I mean, I don't know that I'm entirely up to speed on where things are now. Does the joint degree program as I did it, does that still happen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's definitely something to continue. because I... when I was looking at graduate school back in the late 90s, 1999, I think the trend of library science sort of overtaking archives as the normal credential was already happening. But in my view, having both degrees was really important when I was working in that setting. And it's just one additional year of school, and you get 2 degrees. I mean, what? That's a great deal. And I think that so that's something to continue definitively. Is that program, because it meant a lot to me, and I think it gives people great training, and I just think it's a healthy way for archivists to look at their materials. You know, one of the things I rely on in this job is archivists at the National Archives who really get in depth with the relevant record groups for the Department of State, know them well, and have a historical sensibility so that they can answer questions. And if I ask a question, they can say, "Oh, well, what you're really talking about is this," and point you in the right direction. That's invaluable at any archive you walk into. So I think the history aspect of the archival training is something that's really important to maintain. I think that, in terms of the future, let me just say this. I think one of the biggest benefits I got from being at USC was the breadth of training. I wasn't just pigeonholed into one type of assistantship. But I really got the opportunity to do 5 or 6 different things that were all under the big umbrella of history, but taught me about different aspects of the profession. So that when I saw a job opening up at the Department of State, I wasn't confused or scared or disdainful, but saw it as a genuine possibility to have a meaningful career. And so the continue aspect for me, and I'll guarantee, most people that I worked with here didn't have anything like that experience. I mean, just nothing at all. And to me, that's absolutely invaluable. And it says that's definitely something that I would hope the program and the department and the college and the university would continue to support, is a program that really gives students the breadth of public history. So you may know going that you're going to work in preservation, and that's fine, but to have the opportunity to experience all these different things and learn about them, I think is really, really invaluable. And that's the advantage that a place like USC has over schools that just offer museums or just offer preservation or something like that. And so I would hope that the program could keep up that level of breadth because it was... absolutely critical for me. No question about it at all. But it all costs money, right? I mean, I understand it's difficult to do, but it's a really important thing. So does that answer your question?
It does.
Okay.
So last thing, is there anything that you wish I would have asked you or anything you sort of want to add?
I don't think so. I think you covered the ground pretty well.
Okay.
Thanks for the opportunity to do this.
Thank you so much for meeting with me.
Yeah, great. I don't know how your recording is set up, but could I ask you a few things offline?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, still through Skype, but maybe not as part of the... Yeah.
Okay, so